This is the ASC podcast brought to you by the Communications Committee of the Association for Surgical Education. Embracing the mission of excellence, innovation, and scholarship, the ASC is impacting surgical education globally.
Everyone, this is your podcaster moderator, Mingli Wang. Thank you for joining us. I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Dr. Tracy Deckard. Dr. Deckard is the chief of acute care surgery and trauma at Boston Medical Center. She's had an active role in improving outcomes of critically ill and injured patients. In 2014, she founded the Center for Socially Responsible Surgery to establish social responsibility as a core value of surgical practice. Her areas of interest is in surgical education and social determinants of health. I'm thrilled to have this chance to talk with her and learn about this topic, just like you are for those tuning in. Dr. Deckard, for anyone less familiar with the term, what does social responsibility in surgery actually mean?
Okay, great question. Of course, there's not one answer in a sense or one definition, but I'd like to say it is our professional duty as physicians or surgeons to improve the health of our society. And then to do that, it really does entail diagnosing the social causes of disparities in health outcomes. And then this is true at not only the individual level in the patients that we see in front of us every day, but also more at the community level as well. So therefore, we are trying to provide both sort of local and systemic interventions. So that's one sort of, I guess, definition, if you will.
Great. So for the naysayers or those really unfamiliar or mm-hmm. those that are just in their practice, kind of in the weeds of their responsibility, their clinical responsibility to patients and doing their operations, why do we need to discuss social responsibility as surgeons? Aren't there like sociologists out there
who might be able to help us change society? But if you want to be in the sort of more practical answer would be that if you look at an individual's health, 80% of it is determined by behaviors and the social and environmental conditions in which people exist, right? So the work we do in healthcare is actually only 20%. So that's in a way discouraging, right? Because we train so hard and so long and work so hard. And then to think that the work you're doing is really only a small piece of what really is constituting health for our patients. So if we don't address the other 80%, right, we're really then not doing as much as we can to really provide, you know, the best care for our patients. So as surgeons, if we don't think about this and kind of incorporate it into our practice and so forth, our patients will actually have worse outcomes. And I'm sure everyone really does want the best for their patients. And therefore, you really have to bring it in because the quality, you know, quality care in surgery does matter to have the social determinants addressed and social risk factors and so forth. So it's really about providing the best care possible for our patients. So that's one reason. But then there's a whole other piece, which is the equity piece, where I think, unfortunately, in our training and as we grow up in surgery, we just kind of think that everyone has access to us as surgeons. And that's absolutely not the case. And it's true in this country, which we think of as, you know, we're a rich country compared to many others. We are underserved as far as surgeons. Not everyone has access to surgeons. One third of US counties have no surgeon. And then if you look globally, it's not surprising, you know, it's even worse. One third of humanity receives 3.5% of the world's operations. So if we don't think about this, one, there's a huge amount of people on the globe and in our country who have no access to the work that we do. And then if we don't think about this, the patients that we actually do see in front of us will have worse, possibly worse outcomes because we're not addressing these issues.
Wow. Yeah, I think that surgeons want to do better and want to have the best patient outcome and quality of care. And I'm glad that you addressed the health equity piece too. I didn't know all those facts. And I didn't know that so many people are underserved in this country and as well as globally. So, okay, I'm a surgeon now in an academic center that is convinced by your arguments to practice social responsibility surgery now. What are some of the practical things that I should be doing? What would you suggest as step one, step two for our listeners out there who are in academic surgery?
Yeah, I think, again, so much of this, these ideas, right? It's really multidimensional. It's not one answer or one thing. And when you think about how are the different ways, there's different sort of categories, right? Like one would be just political advocacy. So fighting for your patients and your community. So you might have to be doing crazy things like talking to your congressperson or going to your state house or really trying to do work to ensure your patients have access to surgery or whatever it might be, right? There's just tons of examples. So advocacy is one piece, and then surgery residencies could start doing advocacy training, right? That would be totally appropriate, I think, to have as part of our armamentarium as physicians and surgeons, right? To sort of have a better sense of how to do that, to make sure maybe that, you know, laws are passed to protect our patients from whatever it may be. Then there's things such as research, which we all, many of us do already, but, you know, really thinking of your research maybe in a more like socially conscious way and thinking about the issues and like health services. So not like disparities are known. That's old news that we have disparities, right? So now the research really needs to be thinking about how to address them, right? So we think about translational research in our definition that we use is that instead of the old definition, we're changing it, right? So it's taking our research efforts and then that data is taking it then into the advocacy and changing policy and laws to then have effect for our patients. So one perfect example of that would be, I'm a trauma surgeon, and we had noticed that our victims of violence were not accepted to rehab as often as others. And let's say you have that data, you now take that and you go to your state house and say, listen, this isn't right. So then try to see if maybe one of your congressmen or women, right, would maybe write a bill to say rehab centers cannot discriminate. And, you know, you just try to make change so that way this isn't ongoing. So that's one sort of small example. And then another is education, which is huge, right? I mean, so much of our jobs is education, whether it's the residents, fellows, and medical students, and changing some of our education so that we address these topics, right? We talk about this and teach about social determinants. We teach how all the specifics of how in surgery, you know, our patients are doing worse because of social determinants and social risk factors. If you, right, like if you're malnourished, of course you're going to have worse outcomes. If you're homeless, like, do you even have access to surgery, right? There's so many examples. So the education piece is huge. Because I think that's really where, right, like if we don't address this, it just is, of course, going to continue, right? For sort of generations, right? Like there's no reason it wouldn't continue. So the education piece, I think, is crucial because hopefully our trainees and those coming up in surgery will think differently. And then, you know, then we can stop that cycle sort of inequity, disparities, and all of that. So that the way new generations aren't just continuing to have the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some, a couple examples, I guess, of you know, what you had asked about.
Great. You know, there'll be listeners on here who don't practice in academic medicine. You know, they may be in a rural setting or in private practice. What do you see as some of the challenges or barriers that they may be facing, and what can they do to help?
Yeah, I think there's barriers, like you mentioned, everywhere, right? It could be rural, it could be in an urban environment, it could be academic, community hospitals. I mean, it's really everywhere, of course. It's not as if some places or types of places or hospitals are immune to these issues. And I think if you're maybe a more rural, I would say community engagement would be key, right? Like really understanding the needs of your community and working with them. So if it's a smaller and a rural location, it might be a little easier to kind of identify who the community leaders are and work with them to understand their needs. So for example, if you're not getting, you know, if you're a bariatric surgeon, do MIS, right? Maybe people aren't coming for surgery. And why is that? And figure that out and work with your community to say, well, this is an option and why aren't more people using it? Or why is it that people who have cancer are coming with, you know, at a later stage and then figuring that out? Because of course you don't want to operate on cancer at a later stage. Like that's, you know, just like really working with your community and involving them in the process, I think would be one way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a huge lift.
And, yes, it is. You're right.
It's a huge, you know, goal to work towards health equity. What, you know, in addition to some of the local challenges, what kind of bigger national collaborators can we find to help us get started in our small community or in our small local institution?
Yeah.
What are some good resources for us to look at?
Yeah, well, the good news is there's many, many more than there used to be. These ideas that I, you know, have had along the way, right early on, people thought I was, you know, like, what is she talking about? And luckily, I don't get that reaction as often. I still do, but it's so different now. The landscape is so different. So our national societies are very much in a different place, right? I mean, even take ASC, for example. So there's a committee on citizenship and global responsibility. And that committee is doing a lot of work that kind of fits in this, you know, ideas of what we're talking about in social responsibility. And then the college, not that long ago, in their bulletin, they wrote an article about how social determinants affect outcomes and how your quality indicators are so intertwined with social determinants. And that was an article in the ACS bulletin. So they even are recognizing this topic. And then the college has, for the Committee on Trauma, which I know, of course, more so as a trauma surgeon, but they started a group called iSAVE, which is about improving social determinants to attenuate violence. And that's a working group that they just developed out, you know, de novo. They made up this group. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to prevent firearm-related death and disability by looking at kind of social determinants. And, you know, these ideas and these societies and organizations can really have a huge role in this area. And the individuals, you know, join the committees and join the societies and then trying to, you know, try to push this envelope and enact change, because this is maybe not the case in all societies, surgical societies, but it could be, you know, we could push that. And I would say the students and residents coming up are probably the most, would be the most successful at really doing that, right? Because they believe in it and they understand it. And so, you know, if we're embracing, hopefully, diversity the way we should, right? We're diversity means taking in all kinds of, right, different thoughts, ideas, people in all kinds of ways. So, yeah, I do think the conversation is changing, just not just locally, but nationally. And in surgery, we're a little behind, let's be honest, compared to some other fields of medicine. But there is hope, right? Because I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it in just in the past decade change, you know, in front of my eyes, I'm noticing these things that I'm talking about, and it's happening. So I'm encouraged and hopeful that, you know, we can continue to sort of push this and have this be a much more part of our lives as surgeons. Yeah, as surgeons.
I was wondering if you could share your experience in the challenges or barriers that you've had to face in trying to make changes and improve, you know, education, research in your own institution around social responsibility in in surgery and medicine. Because I think that, you know, as someone who might be interested in doing this, what can they expect to have to contend with? And
yeah, that's a great question, Mingli. I mean, right? I mean, because almost all kinds of ideas or work or new initiatives take resources, right? And we all know our hospitals are not, you know, filled with resources to just give away. That's always tricky. But so I would say, some of the barriers. One was that these ideas were somewhat new in surgery. So when I first started talking about these types of ideas, I got support from pediatrics and one of the emergency medicine physicians. Like it wasn't at first in my own department, which is just many years ago. So no one in my current department will be, I'm not, you know, pointing any fingers at anyone currently in my department, but, you know, back in the day, at first, yeah, the support I got was from others and that's fine. Right. So maybe recognize that you're going to have to find people who get it or understand or appreciate maybe these ideas, and they might not be surgeons at your hospital, but that's okay. Like you could still work with them or collaborate or meet together to sort of talk about things. And and then honestly, it was the med students. Very early on, back in 2014, I found a group of med students who were passionate and so such amazing young people who all ended up going into surgery, luckily. And that's who helped me get this really started. And in time, we kept going, and then we did programs here at the hospital. And then we did, and then we got our paper out, and then we did, you know, we just kept going. And then once we got, then more students came, and then more research, and then more projects. And then it was accepted as the norm. Like now everyone thinks that these ideas here where I am are totally the norm because we've been doing it now for, you know, several years. And it just took time to really build that though. So I think if you're going to be someone at another institution where maybe there aren't people around you who kind of think this way, it might take time, but it doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. Like we just gotta keep pushing and finding like-minded individuals. And I think it's easier now than ever to find, like, right? Because you can find them even if they're not in your hospital. They could be somewhere else in the country and just someone to get ideas from or bounce ideas off of or just ask for help, right? Like there's lots of ways to find each other, whether it's through our societies like ASE or others, but you just have to realize, I guess, that this is the long game, right? Like this is not a, like, I'll do this for this year and won't that be fun? And then I'll move on to something else. Like, no, this is a long-term type initiative or idea, right? It's so much more like a philosophy. Like, this is how you approach your surgical life and probably your life in general, right? Like, and this, it just is like changing the frame or the lens of how you look at things. So this is more a continuous effort, and just appreciate, I guess, that that's the case. And so you're not going to just, you know, change things within weeks or months, or maybe even a year or two. It does take time.
Well, congratulations on your positive results at Boston. And like you say, for those of us out in all over the country where these ideas are not mainstream, or it's going to take work. And I am as someone who works with medical students, that's that makes me feel very hopeful, and that that the younger generation is you know, this group that's going to make a bit better future for all of us. I know this isn't really a topic, but as a senior faculty who has so much success and is a great mentor for medical students and residents and junior faculty, what you know, how can we continue to connect people to each other? And you know, what advice do you have for us junior faculty out here looking to do better? What were some of the traits that made you you know, bring these people together? Yeah. How did you do it?
Well, I think you have to be a little scrappy for sure, right? Like, this is not this is not something that you just go to your chair and then they're like, oh, here's some money, like, go do this, right? That's not how this works. So you beg, borrow, steal. You, like, I do whatever I need to do, and I have no shame. I'm like, I find people to help, and they do, which is just lovely and amazing, right? Because they believe in the work. And so you just have to do the non-traditional routes, right? Like, this is, like, mm-hmm. I said, it's not the like meeting with someone in the hospital leadership and then getting a grant or money necessarily. I mean, if you have that, mm-hmm. and you may, you know, people may have that option, and that would be, of course, lovely and wonderful if they do, but they may not. And if not, you figure it out. Like, you just take advantage of all kinds of things, like, whether it's, you know, the students care, so they'll give their time and effort, and the residents may as well. And then you just sort of build on it. And you have to, as the faculty, for example, like, of course, you have to have the vision and the leadership and the passion to show them and get them excited. So you really just wanna, it's almost like, I feel like I'm a surgeon, but I'm really like a preacher, right? Like, I am preaching. I'm like, please listen to these ideas and thoughts and come with me. And if you preach, you know, people will come and people will join. And it's an exciting, right? Because once you just have one small success, then it's just lovely to really be working in this space. Because, of course, ultimately, right, who's mm-hmm. benefiting? It's the patients, right? It's the patients, right? So, yes, do you get an article on your CV? That's fine. That's lovely. But, you know, right, mm-hmm. like, that's not the point. The point is to do better care for your patients and, mm-hmm. You know, give your skills to more people than what we've done historically. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's really about. So kind of the service component that really, I guess, keeps you going, because it's just so exciting to think that you're, you know, doing things for your patients that are getting them better in different ways and in the less traditional type ways. So yeah, it's not, there's no like formula. I wish I could give it to you. Like, just here, let me send you this Word document and you follow this. Like, you have to be scrappy for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, the hour's getting late. My final question is, you know, I just want to kind of wrap this up with, you know, what are the big takeaway points that you want listeners on this episode of our ASC podcast to take away?
Yeah, great. I would say, you know, to really think about what's your like approach philosophy, the way you think about surgery and surgical disease and our patients and our profession. And I think it's our duty really to understand all the factors that, you know, lead to these disparities. And then more so for sure, it's then take the knowledge that we have, take the privilege that we have and our skills, and then like use that really to then address these issues, whether it's at your own institution or at a higher kind of societal level. And so we want to deliver excellent patient care, which I think we are always all trying to do, but it has to be also kind of an equitable and done in a sustainable way.
Great. So surgeons out there, just to summarize, you have a professional duty to improve health of our society, to work towards this health equity, get involved with advocacy, education, service, and research. And ASE is a great place to do that and connect with like-minded collaborators. Audience members, thank you for joining us on this episode of the ASE podcast. We hope you'll join us again on the next one. Thank you, Dr. Deckert.
Thank you so much. Love to talk about this, if you couldn't tell.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another edition of the ASC podcast brought to you by the Communications Committee of the Association for Surgical Education. You can check out many great resources on the ASC website at www.surgicaleducation.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast series where we discuss pressing issues in surgical education. We invite you to join the ASC and get involved, and wish you much success in your pursuit of surgical education excellence.